Well, welcome. Just to begin, were any of you able to read this? Raise your hands if you were able to read this material. Okay, not so many, and yet you've all experienced it, so we're good. I do recommend you read it. This is from the book The Myth of Freedom, which some of you may have already. This is a collected works of Chögyam Trungpa. There's, 9 or 10 volumes? Many volumes. But you can get just Myth of Freedom itself individually. And this particular module is, we're talking about the wisdom of emotions, or we could say working with emotions. And this session, is particularly about negativity, which is a very juicy topic. And in this chapter, working with negativity,
This is the new book, the new version
of the display lady.
It's good to buy it, actually.
Negativity is something that we've all experienced. But what's really interesting is the question, what do we think it actually is? In this chapter, it's described as the basic aggression of wanting things to be other than they are. And what we then do with that impulse. So it's not a problem in itself. It happens all the time. Somebody cuts you off. There's an immediate arising of a response. What do you do with that? In and of itself, it's simply an emotional response, a texture, and it informs you that something doesn't feel right immediately. But the next thing you do is go, it's a guy with a hat. Another goddamn guy with a hat. All those guys with hats drive like idiots. And the next time you see a guy with a hat, you're reminded and you're on a tear about guys with hats. That's extra. And that's called negativity. So let's get back to, and we'll talk about that. But I wanted to get into what we really think of how we can actually work with negativity as part of our path, rather than being something that we reject or that we are trying constantly to be placid or nice or react. Or be sort of have this image of who we think we're supposed to be. We're supposed to not get angry. We're supposed to handle everything. And meanwhile, we are blowing our lids. So, in this chapter, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche discusses how negativity, not only is it not a problem to experience that initial reaction, but it informs you some about your own experience. You can get a lot of information about the situation. Maybe you're, rather than there's a guy with a hat, you understand there's a traffic situation that you ought to be aware of. So there's a bigger view. And it's the simplicity of experiencing it and the sort of revealing and acute message that you get can really be beneficial and, in fact, is your path. Because there's not a day that goes by that something occurs in my life that I don't like or that I have a reaction to or a response to. It's my resistance to it. It's my tendency to want to cling to the way I think it should be, to defend my position, to ignore it and just go about as though it's not really happening, thereby making it more of a problem for myself. Or I can feel terror that things aren't going the way I want and groundless. All of this is negative negativity. Does that make any sense, or is that confusing to anybody? Anybody? You're welcome to speak up.
Could you repeat it?
What did he say?
Could you repeat it?
Could you repeat it? I forgive.
You know, I will again and again, because this is Buddhism. I will. So, the problem with negativity or negative negativity is we shift from the experience itself into a conceptualization of what's happening and an elaboration, and we build a whole storyline based on what occurred, based on our emotional response to the situation, and we kind of build an edifice of our reactivity. You look very hip with your glasses on.
I had an eye exam.
Okay, I'm fixing that. Yeah.
Sorry. It's
no worries.
It's weird not to see people's eyes. But I can't help it.
As George mentioned last week, you were talking about having... I'm sorry. As you were talking about having a thought and then sort of digging in with that thought and getting carried away with creating a whole universe out of a thought that wasn't even real. This is fundamentally doing that with negativity.
So we're a negative picture.
Yeah, but we really love it. I mean, we really like to be pissed off. And we really get a lot of juice out of sort of digging into our position of this should be this way. And we get off on the me, this is what I think and it should be right, versus you, and you do it that way. So we automatically click into a hugely dualistic situation. And we automatically click into a situation where there's no communication. There's just this solid wall of separation and sort of arming ourselves with our opinions and our solidifying our stand. And from that we get evidence, we can build whole storylines about why that guy in the hat is such an idiot, and all the people who've ever known who've worn hats are just like, so we can really, really do a thing, and the next thing we can do is turn that into an activity of aggression, which is really kind of interesting, and thereby we start a whole lot of problems. And we, as I said, we do it because on some level we feel like it gives us energy. It's a kind of powerful energy in it. So how do we relate to this energy without solidifying, without recreating again and again our little kingdom of me? I actually think of this is really funny. I think of this as confession. And I've said it before here. Does anybody else in this room watch The Real Housewives? Am I the only one? I consider this The Real Housewives effect. It would be worth it just for research.
You have to watch it.
If you watch it.
When is it on?
Well, all the time, actually. There's a million of them because it's such a fabulous enterprise, a successful enterprise that they've started them in almost every city in the country and the world. And what you see are people acting horrifically with all the worst ways that
I have to confess I've seen some.
Oh,
Jeannie!
Now
Muffy,
it comes
you're
out.
So kind.
I'm pure. I never saw. In fact, I don't have a TV yet.
Well, you will. I'm going to force you to watch. They fight, and what they do is there's a little thing that happens, and then because there's six or eight of them, it goes bing, 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 over and over and over again. No, but you said so, so blah, blah, blah. But you said da, 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 da. No, I heard you said da, da, da. And then it goes around and around. And what we create is a universe of negativity in which they only exist to sort of entertain themselves with these confabulations of blame and accusation and territory. But we do it too. We're constantly doing it. That's the pain. That's a really excruciating part. It's easy to sit there and watch them and go, oh my God. But we really very easily can slip into that ourselves.
They sound bored. They're creating drama for the sake of drama.
Well said. And in this material, he writes, in fact, that the fascination with it is that it's a kind of entertainment. And he describes it as frivolous, that we sort of sink into, you're exactly on target, we sink into a kind of behavior of frivolity rather than face what? Rather than just be in the space of what you feel, that we, and you can think of it as well as what do we all do? We go shopping. Shopping is kind of like a real biggie, right?
Not for me. I hate it.
I don't shop and I don't watch TV.
What do you do?
What do we do?
Obsess about other things.
What do you do? What do you? I mean, I don't have to.
I don't know.
You don't have to out yourself on this.
No, it's fine. I have to
on national radio.
NPR. That's not
there you go.
That's not very healthy either. Actually, to listen
right.
to much radio. Just, I mean, whatever.
Politics.
To get more and more.
YouTube.
Laughing about it. No, just to get more. This sort of addiction to information. Like, I need to know more and more. Why?
And how many hours can go by? Oh, I'm sorry?
What did Trump do today?
Yeah. PR can get that way. They get their one opinion going and wrap it around in circles.
Does anybody watch Reddit? Does anybody look at Reddit here? People. Another incredible mind suck and energy suck of not being. It's very entertaining, but it's not actually. It's actually a way of diverting oneself from actually feeling that you're sitting here, just sitting here, which seems to be very difficult in your life.
I just want to make a point, though. I tried to make it. I don't know if I was, but you know, we like, it's part of that duality. We like to, you know, make fun of or dismiss certain types of entertainment or whatever. But what I'm saying is, even the obsession with just knowing all these facts about all these truly important things, it could be just obsessing, just learning more and more about climate
change. That's right, particularly now.
Something really that we all liberals here would all, well, I should speak for myself, but would say, oh, it's good to learn about that. But there's a point in which just learning, it's like overeating. It's like,
exactly.
You don't need all that information. What? Why?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you're right. And it's endless, actually.
One and not the other. They're equally getting us away from ourselves.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
So, in this text, what are we encouraged to do? He calls this frivolity cowardly. And he says, he uses some pretty extraordinary language. Does he not? To describe what how we should relate to this. And he says, and I'd like to have somebody read a little bit of this too.
May I read it?
Where are you reading? Because I'll show you.
Conceptualize negativity.
Okay, let me see. What page?
My book, I'm on the bottom of page 74.
Oh, a wrong text. Exactly what I was hoping for.
Okay, this makes a lot of trouble. To conceptualize negativity, the negative negativity must be cut through. It deserves to be murdered on the spot with the sharp blow of basic intelligence, prajna paramita. That is what prajna is for. To cut through intelligence when it changes into intellectual speculation or is based upon a belief of some kind. Beliefs are reinforced endlessly by other beliefs and dogmas, theological or moral or practical or businesslike. That kind of intelligence should be killed on the spot, quote, uncompassionately. This is when compassion should not be idiot compassion. This intellectual energy should be shot, killed, squashed, raised to dust on the spot with one blow. That one blow of basic intelligence is direct compassion. The way to do this does not evolve out of intellectualizing or trying to find a way to justify yourself, but it just comes as the conclusion of basic intelligence and from a feeling of the texture of the situation. I will stop here, but you've got a word at least, prajna, prajna paramita.
So those of you who have been in this class before know we studied the prajna paramita. So this should give you a hint of how we're actually already working with this material. One of the really interesting things about this chapter, reading it again after many years, is how I see how we actually, these aren't theoretical ways of, the techniques that were given a little further along in the article, being the four karmas, aren't theoretical. We can actually use them in terms of how we relate to this frivolity and how we can navigate our world without sort of polluting it by our own confusion. I just wanted to point out in the reading that Michael said, I want to emphasize, this is what prajna is for, to cut through intelligence, even intelligence, which we prize so much, when it changes into intellectual speculation or is based upon a belief of some kind. Beliefs are reinforced endlessly by other beliefs and dogmas, theological or moral or practical or business-like. That kind of intelligence should be killed on the spot. Anybody have any reactions to this?
I just think it's that killed on the spot. I'm funny. I guess use of words.
Well, it is. I mean, it's actually kind of shocking, isn't it? I mean, he's not kidding around. He's saying, don't count on a religious dogma. This is a class about Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist religion. And one of the bases of it is don't be hanging out, building your castle on religious dogma, including our own.
So is it against all rigidity?
I think...
And not being like open to what's here and just sort of going with what you've already learned?
What do you think?
Sort of figured out before?
What do you think? I mean, I think there's... Let me just add, I think there's some sense here that you can actually be trusted to know when you're actually onto something or when you're BSing yourself. That there's actually some...
Sometimes.
Well, actually, this is indicating you actually can. You can be the one who can trust your own
So I don't need any dogma.
But isn't it more about like clinging to your concepts? Isn't that what he's talking about? Cutting through concept and the belief system and you said rigidity because that there's a quality of solidification. You know, like you build up your belief system and then you hang on to that and that creates an oppositional force. So instead of that, there's a quality of cutting through that.
Yeah, but sure, but religion itself is a concept.
Yes.
Right.
So,
but we learn all these concepts to support our meditation.
Isn't that interesting?
So you have to start somewhere, right?
That's right. You do have to start somewhere.
And then we throw them out?
Yeah, I think so.
You have to start by studying. Yes, of course. You can't say, I'm never going to study. I'm just going to come up with some vapor in my own mind. It's when to go beyond that.
And I think that the whole sense of having some sort of self-awareness or self-confidence that your mind is actually trustworthy.
You're not picking a direction. Opening your mind to enlightenment. You're not stereotyping into
yourself or all experience. Yeah, but it's tricky though, isn't it? Because you could really be off the mark too. So how do we know if we're off the mark? In the material, the indication is that the world will speak to you. That you get some kind of feedback. You drive your car into a tree, or you say something completely that sort of isn't respectful or aware of the situation, and you get feedback from somebody that you're off the mark. So that's where it becomes a path. Or in fact, if you're open to not freaking out every time you get a message that you're not that you have your own confusion and you actually experience it and open to it, you're going to constantly, the messages back and forth are going to be, that is the path, and they're going to be continuous. Yes? No? Confusion?
Well, no, it's like you have to be open enough to be confident in your own intelligence.
And soft enough to not hold on to the concept of your intelligence. Right?
You get that.
And that can be solidified as well. Muffy, did that? You get any satisfaction in any of?
I think you have to be able to forgive yourself as well. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody does or says something that, you know, they're not proud of at times, or that they felt like they shouldn't have. You know. But
God,
you've
I think
got to
you're
be more mindful
here.
Of it, perhaps next time. You know.
Well, absolutely.
Exactly.
If you begin to look at a pattern in your negativity, you begin to contemplate on it, and you see a pattern in your negativity, then maybe you begin to get a truer picture of yourself and begin to analyze it and see, what is this? What is it about me? You know, that I'm having this negativity. What is it about me?
Why do I hate everybody with hats?
What is it?
You could think, why do I hate everyone with hats?
Yeah. Well, but that's... Isn't there a sense of both gentleness and softness in yourself and a hard-edged kind of being... Katrina to with him?
And that's exactly what sort of taking the temperature of the situation is about, is that you trust yourself, but you're also able to feel out the situation. He says, you don't just jump into a situation. You feel the situation out. You assess what's needed. And you feel it. But you don't forget the basis of this is Dharma. I mean, you're in it not for you, not so that you'll get a gold star, but that for the benefit of the situation as a whole. So that's something we have to remember, that what we're talking about here is make Dharma progress along the path. Just as an aside. But.
So what would you say about the Sword of Manjushri? That seemed like an important thing.
Well, it's funny that you asked.
Okay, let's roll on.
How interesting.
Here we have something. Yes. Roberta.
No, I have, my question was in the paragraph after the first paragraph beginning on 75, it's halfway through, it says, if it is negativity, then there will be certain ways to squash or murder it. Somehow the energy to do this comes from the basic negativity itself. And I don't feel like I understand that. I'm also very disappointed to learn that the people on Masterpiece Theater are not actually real, because I've been very worried about Trixie's drinking. So, anyway, that's my addiction. But so how does this? How do you get the energy from the negativity to murder the negative? Negativity?
How do you think? What would you think?
I don't know.
I think that's where the Sword of Manjushri comes in, and where the sort of your willingness to see what is, to including your own habitual emotional reaction comes in, and you just cut it. You just see it, and you cut it.
So I can sit and stew about my brother who drives me up a wall for a very long time, especially if he calls and does something, I do know the thing to do is just stop it, but usually it involves getting up and doing something for me to distract myself from this.
So what's interesting, so he brings this up in you.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Well, look, how about further? Is it benefit him to be doing this again and again? And it seems somehow that you, that you have the capacity and the power to cut that.
Does it benefit him? I think he cuts it better than I do. I don't. I mean, we do it to each other, but I think he can cut. He has other distractions in his life. When he has a wife and a child and a grandchild, he's all very involved in lots of things. More so than I am. But I don't know. It just becomes very. This line about using the energy from the basic negativity itself to.
Well, that's what's there. You're not trying to get rid of what's there. You're just simply use it to cut through. In other words, you're not trying to sugarcoat it or look the other way. think it's going to disappear because I don't see it right now. I'm looking and thinking about somebody else. I mean, you're just going directly to it.
I'm assuming it involves dropping the storyline.
Yes, absolutely. You are dropping. You are cutting, in this case, means dropping. It's just like when we talk about disowning. You know how we talk about disowning?
I remember.
This term we encounter when we meditate, and we have this idea that we just simply, wow, you know, discovered something, and big deal, you know. I mean, suddenly, you know, we're buoyed and we have all this kind of uplifted sense. But, I mean, you know, this is like just a temporary experience. Well, I mean, we have to let go of it. It doesn't mean that it isn't useful. It just means that we're really in the present. When we're carrying all of these patterns into the present, we realize that they're just basically fudging up the whole process of what's fundamentally open space. And, you know, bringing all this garbage in there. So, but we use the actual momentum or the traction of that energy to basically pop it. And we do that by just looking directly at it and relaxing. We don't try to do anything about it. We don't try to change it. We don't try to whisk it away. We actually train in simply being present. And in that simple presence, it takes care of itself. That's what we have to learn through our own experience.
I'm not sure that's ever happened to me, but
yeah.
I mean, I can leave
it. You do it all the time
in
minor things. You don't think about it, and then you get it when you come to this big thing, this big deal, because you've made such a big deal about it, and it means so much to you that you just feel like I can't deal with it. But I mean, what I'm suggesting is trying this simply relaxing into being present and realizing we're making a fresh start in this moment. We're not just sort of going back and going over and over and over again, repeating ourselves, but actually just right now.
Well, I usually try coming back to the breath. I mean, I just try to let it, okay, I'm going to breathe here.
That's a good start. Mm-hmm.
And you know that it's happening. So like, you know, you recognize that. You know, you brought this up. You said this is a pattern I get
familiar.
Into, you know, habitually.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just sort of recognizing it as it happens. And when I think of energy, like it sort of snowballs, like, you know, it starts out as something, you know, makes you upset, and then you dwell on it, and it gets bigger and bigger, and then and you have all this energy. It's not, you know, it doesn't feel good. But, you know, I think that when they're saying, like, the energy that it creates can be used to whatever they put it, murder it or whatever. You know, and it's, you know, it's not easy, obviously, but but it's, we're all kind of saying the same thing, I feel like, you know, it's just being able to recognize it, that it's happening, and say, okay, you know, this, it's not doing me any good.
It's also sort of the most compassionate thing is not to let the situation, say, for example, you're having an interaction with your brother or anybody, to drag it on and on and on and on. But it's much more compassionate to use that sword of Manjushri and cut it. And it doesn't mean by punching the guy in the snoot, necessarily. It could mean by dropping your attachment to the outcome of the situation, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's probably like what you said, that you are.
It's not easy.
Attachment. So it's your reality, not necessarily a brother's. You may have a different concept.
It's really interesting.
I'm going through a lot of health related issues in the families, so which we are waiting for some results, which doctor said it could be 99% negative, a positive, and think about positive. But all I can think about the negative thing. I cannot get over that. Everyone is saying there is 99 point something is positive. It is going to be negative result.
Positive.
Like,
well the good results are
negative.
Results
are negative.
I mean, it'll be
positive.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, so why are you thinking about it? But no matter how much I'm trying, that negative part is coming back. So that's why actually one of the reasons I'm here.
Right.
And trying to walk and do other stuff to distract myself. But still that fear, anxiety, and that 1% negativity is coming. Like negative energy, I don't know why I'm spending that. The result is not here yet. So
I really understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is no matter how much you worry about something, it's not going to change the outcome. Mm.
But we think that the whole thing with worry is it's a, you know, there's a lot of psychological stuff written about it.
Right.
It's sort of, you think you're in control of it. You think, oh, if I keep worrying about it, I'm like keeping track of it. Something like that.
Yeah, it's not going to come and surprise me.
Yeah, it's, you know, something like
but
that.
But I think if something's important, a health thing, it's like you can't, pretend it's not there, because there's like, you know, you can't say, it's like the elephant in the room. You say, I won't think about it, and then all you can think about, is that.
What I'm trying to not, I cannot stop thinking about it, but I'm trying to think about more positive stuff instead of thinking about it. So like if positive can outweigh the negative stuff, like thinking about what is good in life, I do not know what to do. So
you're kind of on a razor's edge. You really are, because anything could happen. So I think what we're being encouraged to do in this sense is be aware of what we're experiencing and hang out in it. We're learning how to hang out in that. Hang out in not pursuing one way or another, or we're observing ourselves going with one way or the other. But we're still sort of learning how to hang out where it doesn't feel so good, which is not easy, because our allegiance is to feeling good. We want to feel good. We want to feel everything is fine. So how do we handle real negativity when it occurs? We just have to be, as Michael said, just present with it.
Be aware that you don't have control.
Be present with it every second. And sort of you feel like your heart is peeled open, your chest is peeled open, and you're, how do we hang out with that?
Well, one of the things Phil Berlinger said is to, as we get more willing to trust our experience, we can lean into the sharp points. So in other words, we can actually welcome whatever arises without feeling like we have to protect ourselves or push it away. But, you know, obviously when something becomes a big deal, we just need to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to basically just recognize, first of all, what it is in our experience, which is basically a thought. And so what do we do when we're meditating? I mean, when we're practicing meditation, you know, we have all kinds of thoughts. They can be extremely trivial, or they can be a big deal. But, I mean, we're simply not buying into them. We're just simply relaxing right now. And we're using our posture and our breath to be open and relax and release. And so that releasing is opening. So, and then maybe, you know, it's like, what can I learn from this? I mean, if I'm open, then I can learn something about this. But if I'm trying to, like, just say, I just don't want this to happen, and it's something that I just feel like would be terrible, we're feeding it into with a lot of our own unwillingness to just be present. We're not here now when we do that. We're in this supposition. Whatever reason there may be, however strong that supposition may be, we're not here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it's continually returning to this absolutely open moment right now.
I think there's actually some, I wanted to go into the sort of manjushri and so on, but and the four karmas, but before that I'd like very much for someone, and this is relevant to what you're bringing up, read a section here. Is anybody willing to read? If you could read from here to up there. Or actually, you could even read to there. Okay?
The path of Dharma is not a good, sane, passive, and, quote, compassionate path at all. It is a path on which no one should walk blindly. If they do, out. They should be awakened by being excluded. At the very advanced levels of practice, we can go through the negative negativity and turn it into the original negativity, so that we have a very powerful negative force that is pure and unselfconscious. That is, once having squashed this negative negativity altogether, having gone through the operation without anesthesia, then we reinvite the negativity for the sake of energy. But this could be tricky. If the pure energy of negativity is involved with any form of ground, then it is always regarded as the property of the secondary logical energy of negative negativity. This is because our fascination to relive the basic negativity, to recreate the comfort and occupation of basic negativity. So there should not be any reliving of the occupation at all. Occupation should be completely cleared away. Then the energy which destroys the reliving of occupation turns out to be logical energy transmuted into crazy wisdom. Conceptual and ideas let loose.
Is that what I meant for you?
Yeah. Okay, good.
That is to say, there are no more conceptual ideas, but only energy run wild. Originally, there were conceptual ideas, and they were cut through altogether. So that you no longer regarded light and dark as light and dark, it becomes the non-dualistic state. Should I read the next chapter, paragraph 2?
Yeah.
Then negativity simply becomes food, pure strength. You no longer relate to negativity as being bad or good, but you continually use the energy which comes out of it as a source of life, so that you are never really defeated in a situation. Crazy wisdom cannot be defeated. If someone attacks or if someone praises, crazy wisdom will feed on either equally. As far as crazy wisdom is concerned, both praise and blame are the same thing because there is always some energy occurring. A really terrifying thought.
So the thing is that whether you like it or not, we're going to be frightened. You're going to experience fear. Whether we like it or not, we're going to... It's sort of embedded in our body. It comes into our minds. It's a wave of energy. How do we hang out with that and not get thrown around by it? We have to be willing to just, as Michael said, look at it, feel the texture of it, be present with it, and then be present with the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. That's all we get. And that's a lot, actually. Which doesn't mean that it's easy. Because it's much more seductive to get caught in the projecting of what could happen. The mind, you know, building up whole scenarios of what could happen and what would this mean and what would that mean. And that's all fabrication. None of that is actually right now what's occurring. So our safety is, and the kind of invincibility is, in being in the present moment without succumbing to our emotional to our desperate desire to hold on to our concepts. Just hanging out It's not easy. But that's why we sit. Does that make any sense? This is also my experience.
Who wrote this book?
I'm sorry?
Who was the author?
This is Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche.
The picture's on the back there.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
This is picture, yeah.
Yeah.
So all of the teachers here are students or have been students of Chögyam Trungpa since forever.
70s.
So that's the basis of our teaching is Tibetan Buddhist meditation, as taught by our teacher, Chögyam Trungpa.
Is it me, or does he have an obsession with negativity?
Well, this is a chapter on working with negativity.
No, it got repeated about 6 times in just what she read.
He's talking about not building up a scenario, a storyline. It's okay to feel freaked out, fucked up, messed up, angry, jealous, everything. But to build up a whole slew of thoughts and responses and scenarios based on that, that's negativity, and it's confabulation. None of it is real. It's fabrication. And then we start responding to the thoughts that we have instead of what's actually really happening in front of us. So that's why he's emphasizing in this almost incomprehensible paragraph, negativity. And is that helpful at all? Because I know that that's a difficult paragraph to chew through. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it does.
So I wouldn't say that he's obsessed with it. I'd say he's taking it straight without a chaser. That's my sense of it. And or he's suggesting that we do. And he's saying that if we do that, if we actually hang out in the real true energy of it, the space opens up by which means we can actually be present for whatever is occurring. And that is, and then we can interact with that whatever is occurring fully. And I think we have enough, we just have a few more minutes.
Should we dare to read the karmas?
Yeah, I was going to, that's what I, would you like to read that? Would you like to read that, Martha?
Sure.
Is there something you'd like to read? Because I wrote it down, but maybe you ought to read it.
Well, it begins the tantric tradition.
Okay, go right
ahead. Is that what you describes 4 actions or karma?
Fine, yes, great.
The tantric tradition of Buddhism describes 4 actions or karma yogas. The first is the action of pacifying a situation if it is not right. Pacifying is trying to feel the ground very softly. You feel the situation further and further, not just pacifying superficially, but expressing the whole, feeling it out altogether. Then you expand your luscious, dignified, and rich quality throughout. This is enriching the second karma. If that does not work, then magnetizing is the third karma. You bring the elements of the situation together. Having felt them out by pacifying and enriching them, you bring them together. If that is unsuccessful, then there is the action of destroying or extinguishing the fourth karma. Should I stop here?
I don't know where it, yeah, you could never go wrong, actually. So go ahead. Because I did want to just talk about what we mean by destroying, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
These 4 karmas are very pertinent to the process of dealing with negativity and so-called problems. First pacify, then enrich, then magnetize, and if that does not work, finally extinguish, destroy altogether. This last is necessary only when the negative negativity uses a strong pseudo-logic or a pseudo-philosophical attitude or conceptualization. It is necessary when there is a notion of some kind which brings a whole succession of other notions, like the layers of an onion, or when one is using logic in ways of justifying oneself so that the situation becomes very heavy and solid. We know this heaviness is taking place, but simultaneously we play tricks on ourselves, feeling that we enjoy the heaviness of this logic, feeling that we need to have some occupation. When we begin to play this game, kind of game, there is no room out. It is said in the tantric tradition that if you do not destroy when necessary, you are breaking the vow of compassion, which actually commits you to destroy frivolousness.
Exactly.
I think I better stop.
Yeah,
here.
I think that's exactly it.
The four.
The four karmas. I had a wedding ceremony where, I think I've mentioned it before, where the mother of the bride all of a sudden was agitating the whole wedding party to do a part of the ceremony that the other side of the family didn't have any familiarity with or any understanding of it. And the kids who were getting married were all upset, and there was this whole sort of, you could feel this energy just arise of panic or of confusion. So how do you enter that family dynamic? Well, first, you pacify. You kind of, I had to sort of feel the texture of the two families and of the situation, the bride and groom and so on and so forth, and approach this mother of the bride with a kind of sense of appreciation, appreciating her position, and that one, everyone sort of understood what her needs were. And but then, so this was so amazing to me, but enabling her to sort of understand that it wasn't just about her view of the situation, that it was, that in fact, this was her soon-to-be in-laws, mm-hmm. and that it was really important to have a kind of copacetic environment there. And then I said, and therefore, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm. And it'll boom. Destroy.
So it doesn't mean like you have to take a knife and cut somebody's head off. But it fundamentally means that you really are willing to take a panoramic view and to enter the situation open and with the kind of intelligence about how these elements need to communicate. So that's why this pacifying, enriching, magnetizing, and destroying, they sound really like, ooh, but they're not. They're actually, how do we function? How can we actually engage with our world? So, any other questions or feelings?
Well, I think in that scenario that you just laid out, it doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. It means that it's a logical conclusion that would make all parties happy should take place. It could happen if everybody agreed that it's a good thing.
Right. What is somehow required is the wisdom and the self-confidence to see, to trust that one is seeing clearly. That in fact, sure, anything can happen, but what's the healthiest, most wholesome outcome of the situation?
You're talking about four different parties' version of reality. So,
but really, there's just one space.
Right. Mm. But it's four different perspectives of that space.
Probably more than four.
Well, I'm just saying four yeah. groups.
Right.
The bride, the groom, the mother of the bride, and the family of the bride. Mm-hmm. The family. I'm just keeping it at that instead of spreading right. it out.
Did you want to say something in particular about the sort of Manjushri?
Well, I think it's an interesting image, the idea of that's the destroying almost like with one stroke. And I think it's cutting through duality of the sword has two sides, and so you're cutting through your own solidification, both of the ego and the object, is my understanding. So the sword is that image of destroying in this case, and that sense of just sometimes that taking action that is very appropriate and direct can sometimes really be the right thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, what's interesting, he writes in the book, he said, the sword doesn't actually need to come down, just need to wave it. Which is really interesting.
Yeah, right.
And what do you think that is? The sort of proclamation of what?
That in that chapter?
Yes, it is.
Oh no. Put it on airplane mode. Then it won't ring.
Put it on silent.
No, we have to put it on airplane
mode. Airplane mode is what really works. Slide it up.
Well, it's almost work.
Okay.
Only got three more minutes now. Okay. Anyway. But I hope those of you who didn't get to read this will get a chance to do so. It's one of the most, Emily and I were talking about it earlier, and Muffy, it's deceptively powerful chapter on working with one's own life energy and the... He talks about personal and community laws of how to actually function. And although it was an early text, it seems to be particularly, I found it really phenomenal.
I've got a question.
Yes.
If I got that book tomorrow,
yep.
What is the suggestion on how to read it? Do I read up to where we're discussing? Do I start where we're discussing? Do I read the whole book?
Well, it's unusual.
Because there's a lot of information in there.
Right, because usually we take a book and we go through it, and chapter by chapter. But Joseph designed this curriculum more by topics, I think. So the book is worthwhile in terms of reading sections. I mean, there are different talks. So it's not so much progressive in a way. So the curriculum will go up online every week. Sandra's posting it now. So the reading that's to come will be posted.
It's not in the email. It's on the website.
Yeah, it's on the website. It will be on the website.
In the education section.
Right, in education. So,
yeah.
And at the same time, it's worthwhile just reading the book, you know, from... You could start in the beginning and read through. But just read the chapter that's assigned for the week, so at least you know what you can contribute based on that. Right. Yeah?
Can I
were you going to say something?
No, I just think, Michael Fagan, you had mentioned to me a website called Via Libra or something where you can
get... VialLibri.net.
Via Libri.
That's for used copies.
You can get used copies that are... Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, Michael?
Yeah, so Joseph designed this, and he picked out some very interesting and juicy things. And next week, he assigned to me the one called Love, which is really very juicy. And then the next week...
But there's a second chapter, too, on the...
Yeah, yeah.
Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
There are two chapters to look at.
We're going to look at those, right. And then Michael's going to do the one after that. But it is exceptionally interesting and fascinating material. And I really look forward to both of these. And we will, I think, get a lot out of both of these. So next week is Love and the Eightfold Path, which I may take in reverse order. And the one after that is...
Yeah, what's your topic?
Okay, well, let me just tell you what it is. So then, after that, it's called, the topic is Dropping Self, If Even Just for a Moment. And actually, that's from Cutting Through. It's called The Open Way. There'll be a PDF on that. So I think Joseph will give us information on that. And then April 26th will be a guided meditation. I'll do that. And then we're going to cover a chapter called Aloneness and Mandala. That's the beginning of May. So that will be posted.
Okay. Get that. I think our whole point with this module seems to be taking all this material and bringing it down to kitchen sink level so we can actually work with it versus sort of being all philosophical, theoretical. Mm-hmm. So, and if you find us straying, please pull us back to better.
What's the website that this is supposed to
be? WealthAmBuddhist.org.
Okay.
Were there some cards back there with that on there? Okay, that's easy. WealthAmBuddhist.org. And just, there's a lot of information. There's an introductory section and education. And all of our previous modules are posted. Okay. So there's a lot of material and suggestions. Audio.
Oh.
Yeah. This will be easy. Yes, it will.
Yeah, all the talks are recorded.
Oh, you're taking, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So
yeah,
everything
that's
is recorded.
What I'm doing. I'm doing it.
That's what. Okay.
From the beginning of the...
Oh, okay.
So you can start 7 years. How many years?
Way back. You know, you got to take it. Yeah. Okay.